Right, you're very welcome into the third hour of the 9 till noon show. And just to clarify, we announced a schedule change that kicks off Monday, 6th of January. People want me to run through it again. Of course, I will. Lee Gooch and the Naughty Alarm Clock, 6:30 to 9. That is as it is. Our show is being reduced or compacted or slimmed from 3 to 2 hours. So we're going to run from 9 to 11. I'll play an advert, Shannon, and we'll sort that. I'll play an advert. We'll sort that out in a sec. Where was I? This show goes from 9 to 11. John Bresson's around the northwest, 11 till 1. The main lunchtime news and sport from 1 to 1:30. Jive Time with David James runs from 1:30 to 3:30. Then there's a new show, a new pairing, a new team, Anya and Danny. They are taking you home on their new show. Then the main evening news, the home stretch it's called, of course, the main evening news runs from 5:30 to 6, including the obituary notices and sport, of course. And then Ivan's back with his power hour running from 6 to 7. The evening schedule is unchanged, but it does change up a little bit, new people coming in and what have you. So that's it. That is the change from January the 6th. And more details are available on our website. Right, I've got three ladies with me in studio. Aoife McIldowney, good morning to you. Thank you for joining us. Claire Egan.
Hello.
Hey, Claire. And Roisin Gardner.
Roisin.
Good okay. Morning, and you're all involved with the Swilly Seals. Can, before we talk about what's coming up, right, Aoife, do you want to explain what the Swilly Seals are? Because you're a former swimmer with them, of course, and now a coach. So what is the Swilly Seals?
That's a great question, Greg. Yeah, so the Swilly Seals is an amateur local swimming club in Letterkenny, and it's been around, it's now the club's 40th anniversary. I can talk a little bit about my experience there.
But the club itself, right, do you swim in the sea, in the pool?
No, in the swimming pool at Aura. It used to be in the old swimming pool in Letterkenny, but now it's moved down to Aura.
Great, so that development of that facility was great for you guys, yeah?
Yeah, it was, yeah.
All right, and how many, like, so what does it do over the course of the last four decades? Obviously, is it fun? Is it for competition? Is it a mixture of all of that?
It's actually all of those things, yeah. So yeah. There's competitive swimming, there's people who just want to go and train for fun. So it really covers a whole mixture of different levels and abilities, and it's very inclusive of everyone as well. So, and that's been throughout the years that it's been in existence.
It's really quite remarkable, any organisation to last for 40 years. It's a real testimony to its success. And Roisin, you're a coach with Swilly Seals. Did you ever swim with them?
No, my background, Greg, is in swim teaching. So I'm that old. I used to actually work in the old swimming pool before it was demolished.
And look at her fishing for compliments. I ain't biting.
Somebody in my work actually said to me today when I said I was coming up to promote the 40th anniversary, they said, oh, have you been there since its foundation?
Right, okay. Someone's getting detention.
So I'm on a roll today. But so I actually worked in the old swimming pool, and that's where I met my husband, actually. And we taught swimming lessons there, and a lot of the kids then went from swimming lessons and they progressed into the club from there. And then I did my own thing. I do open water swimming myself. And then my kids came along, and then I taught them how to swim.
Yeah.
And then they got into the club. And then I said, you know what, maybe it would be nice for me to join the coaching team.
Yeah, and, for sure. Yeah. And I mean, your children and are amongst thousands potentially of other young people and people of all different age groups that have been trained through this organisation over the years.
Yeah.
And you're the next in the line, you and Aoife, of course, who was also a swimmer, of volunteers, you know, and committees that keep this type of an organisation going.
100%. We have a strong force behind us. The committee are incredible. They're like birds in the night. You don't see them or hear them, but they are constantly working in the background. They do pancake mornings for the kids to just generate interest and camaraderie. You know, these kids are forming friendships during their formative years. And obviously the coaches then are so committed. We have four sessions a week in the B squad, Four sessions for C and four for A. So we have a strong coaching team there. All those sessions have to be covered by all volunteers. So we're juggling work, we're juggling family, and we're making sure that the swimmers are always catered for. Mm.
And all with busy lives as well. 100%. As a mum, as a worker, as someone working, you know, there's only a certain amount. I'm going to bring Claire in a minute, Aoife. But I just want to learn a little bit more about the club. So in terms of, you heard A, B, C's, what's the structure there then?
I'll actually let Roisin do that, because I'm only starting my coaching journey and it was a very different from when I, back in the day for me.
Another veteran reference there for you to add to the list.
Thanks a million. Seriously, I'm thanking them here, guys. So currently we have A squad, which is Claire is in that, and that would be the top end. And then I coach the B squad. So between, say, maybe 10 to 15, 16 years old teenagers. Absolutely wonderful to coach. I love it. And then we have the C squad then, and they would be slightly younger, say maybe you would have maybe 8 to 10, 12 years old there. And then we have our junior squad then, which we call PUPs, and Development 1 and Development 2. Brilliant. Which we've just actually tried to transform the club a wee bit this year, moving towards more our competitive side and our recreational side.
Well, that's what I was going to say. Talk to me a little bit before I bring the other guests in about the sort of what is sort of recreational, what is in learning. Listen, it's not just our seas, it's the lakes, it's the quarry, you know.
100%,
Being able to swim is, it's astonishing actually how many people along the coast can't swim.
Yeah.
But so what is the balance between sort of learning to swim, obviously mm-hmm. great life skill, the leisure element of it, and then the competitive nature of it. Is that throughout ABC?
So Swim Ireland have a pathway there, and we would start with the fundamentals of like water confidence and that. And that's the kind of thing that you would do in your swimming lessons, Greg. And then you would move on to, you know, your technique. And then once you've kind of achieved technique, then you would be joining the Swilly Seals then. So we would work a lot on technique and development 1 and 2 and our PUPs. And then we'd be moving more towards, you know, competitive swimming in our CB and A squad especially. And within our lanes, so we have 6 lanes in Aura. We're very, very fortunate to have that facility. They're incredible to us. And we have our lanes then are kind of divided up into our recreational and competitive swimmers. And then when we're approaching competition, then we're like fine tuning those swimmers. We're looking at a lot of technique, our turns, our dives, our starts, all of that there. You would see a lot of incredible swimming from Claire's squad and the B squad there. You know, really, really fine tuning that technique.
Yeah, Claire Egan, swimmer with the Swilly Seals A squad. What's your development with swimming? So were you in the water early? Has it always been with the Swilly Seals? What's the story?
Well, I started my swimming lessons when I was quite young, like just in the Aura. But then when I was 8 or 9, I joined the club. I joined Swilly Seals. And so I've been swimming with them ever since then. I started in PUPs and worked my way up. And now I'm in A squad. So I'm training 4 mornings a week now and before school as well, just to keep swimming. And I do some competitions every now and again as well.
Yeah. And what is your goal? Is it to compete or compete at the best level you have? I mean, what is your...
Well, I personally wouldn't be like overly competitive in the swimming.
Okay.
I prefer the like social side of it and the fun and the fitness and getting to meet. I've made some of my best friends through Swilly Seals. And so I enjoy it for that. And I do the odd competition here and there. But there would be some people in the club who would be aiming very high at a national level, even international level, who'd be very good. But I'd just like to swim for myself.
But you are incredible. It's a great commitment that you have. I mean, obviously, you've got the social element and the fitness element of it, right? So it's not all about competition. It's what I think is great is that you can be in there in the A squad, right, and have your goals and what you want to do, and be swimming along people that might have aspirations of national championships. Like, it's fantastic that these can coexist there. It just shows how it is for all.
Yeah, it's everyone's there for their own reasons, but then we can all come together and do it together. And it's nice to know that we're all in it together. And because the early mornings are hard, we'd start training at 6, so it's hard to get the motivation sometimes to wake up.
Course,
so knowing that everyone's going to be there and we're all doing it together is nice.
What is your best discipline in swimming, like distance wise?
Like my favourite event? Or?
Yeah, I think so. Pardon my questions, I don't know an awful lot about swimming, right? I know you get wet. But yeah, in terms of distance, so 100 metres butterfly, breaststroke.
I like the 50 butterfly, but it's quite difficult, but I do like that one.
That sounds to me like you'd be absolutely knackered after 50 metres of that.
Definitely.
You know, jumping out of the water like a seal.
Yeah.
All right. And in terms of the technique of I've actually been interested, you know, in terms of the technique of what you're doing with your arms and legs, right? Because there's a symmetry to that. But breathing, right? How big is breathing in the whole process of swimming? Because, you know, you're using the biggest muscles in your body, but you're snatching at air, right? So is that tough to get right?
That's one of the things you'd work on, I'd say, in maybe Pups or Sea Squad when you're starting out, so you have that perfect for...
So it comes naturally to you by the time you hit the A squad. It comes naturally,
and then when you're in the A squad, you work on trying not to breathe more.
Mm.
You're trying to... Because if you don't need to move your head to breathe, you're going to be moving faster through the water. So now we're, instead of breathing every three and making sure our technique for breathing is perfect, we're just trying not to breathe at all or as little as possible.
And presumably when that becomes instinctive, that's when you sort of get into the zone.
Exactly, yes, yeah. And then you would have, you know, kids that are showing like a lot of potential. Like at the moment, we have some swimmers that are on the National Pathway Development Squads for Ireland and Ulster. Incredible swimmers such as Molly Nulty, Kevin Avenagay.
Yeah, sorry, I didn't mean to cut across the name. Right. That's really important, isn't it? Because... You know, obviously it's up to each athlete what they want to achieve. But if you can actually say, well, if you do this, this is how you get there.
Exactly.
You can, there's a goal, isn't there? Which is, some people need goals.
Are like huge role models for our younger swimmers. You know, they walk onto the deck, they have that aura. They, you know, are so calm in their body. They're already, you know, in their race mindset. They're walking up to the blocks, you know, and you can just see the younger kids. It's like a pedestal that, you know, they're just looking at them. And they take to the water with such finesse and grace. And really, it's a spectacle. It's just something really to be marvelled at whenever you see these swimmers swim.
So, Roisin, why did you decide to start your coaching journey in a club? It is Roisin. Aoife, sorry, beg your pardon.
Look, Swilly Seals has given me so much. I mean, it's been a huge part of my life since I was 7 or 8 years old, and I feel really passionately about it.
Claire's story similar?
Silver Bowl.
Oh, sorry, so I have to tell you. Yeah, so they asked what the worst part of getting up early mornings were, and I said the worst part was after the swimming session, we would have to eat our breakfast in the changing room with like a silver bowl you might get like in prison or something, with like your cornflakes, and then you'd have to walk to school with soaking wet hair. So, you know, joking aside, it did require a lot of discipline and a lot of commitment. And thankfully, Dad was very passionate as well and made sure that we got to all our sessions, even when we absolutely didn't want to go. But it's so important, I think, and looking back on now my experience with Swilly Seals, you know, it taught me great discipline. It taught me to believe in myself and, you know, winning a few national medals and things really, really helped my confidence and taught me a lot of resilience. So there's obviously this woman element of it, but it's so much more than that. And so then when I came back, I lived in Australia for a while. And when I came back, I just really wanted to get involved. My daughter has now started. She's in the development squad. So I've now started to coach that squad as well.
And you actually factored in the Swilly Seals in your move back. It was part of it, right?
Yeah, it was a thing I always wanted to do. And I was thinking about, you know, like coming back home and just that sense of community. It's very hard to get that in big cities, etc. So there is something really special about the Swilly Seals, and even moving home, knowing that I knew people from like my time at the old swimming pool and, you know, all those people. I see them I see them all the time, and it really helped settle back in.
Because you can feel, am I still part of that?
You're a little bit not, then you're not anchored.
It locks you straight back in.
Exactly.
And you've obviously had some great days away, winning competitions.
Yes.
Donegal Sports Star Award.
Oh, that's right. Yes, yeah, back in the day. I feel old now as well as Roisin. It's all right.
We've got me and Claire to balance everything out, so use batter on there.
Absolutely. And I will say they were team efforts. There was, you know, part of it. I know swimming is seen maybe as an individual sport, but it really is a team effort. It was relay teams. And the coaches that showed up, again, you only realise it when you're older, that the coaches that showed up and gave, dedicated all their time, like, we couldn't have done any of that had they not been there. So, like, Charlie McAteer and Mary Anderson, they were huge for us and what they gave to us. And, I mean, taking a bunch of kids down to the Mosney Community Games may not be that's not my idea of a good time.
No, but I don't think there's anything, a bigger endorsement of anything when mums or dads, for that matter, want their children involved, but then also want to get involved to emulate the influence on others that they had from. I mean, you can't get a bigger endorsement than that, can you? So, Claire, you're just going to keep at it, right?
Yeah, definitely.
You're at school still, are you?
Yeah, what I'm year? In fifth year.
Okay, right. So you're pretty busy now with the Leaving Cert.
Yeah.
Good early starts. It'll freshen you up, though. Can you imagine you go into school, right? You're already buzzing. The adrenaline's running. All the muscles are warmed up. Like, it's fantastic.
I know. When I'm in school, I've already been up for 2 or 3 hours and everyone's just rolling out of their beds.
What time do you go to bed before you get up for training?
Well, it depends on the day, but I try to be in early enough.
Yeah. She's not saying because she goes to bed at 9, 3.5 hours on TikTok.
Very disciplined.
If Matty Bond is listening,
am I right?
He's probably saying
yeah, of course I was thinking that. I didn't want to throw you under the bus there. And there's an event coming up, isn't there?
Yes.
Talk to me about that. Oh, but no, sorry, she don't talk to me about that. Hair. How come you've all got nice hair? What's going on? Yours should be green.
My daughter has a top tip for the hair now. So she is at this wonderful age of 14 now, and she takes between 30 and 40 minute showers after swelly season.
Well, that's a nightmare, man. Does she not know that those showers don't run themselves?
That's where the crack is, Greg. Right. They're all in the showers, you know, in the aura together, and they're putting on the conditioner, and, you know, I'm out of fortune in conditioners and this sort of thing.
Though she has her process.
Hair hacks, right. Conditioner okay. under the hat, all of that there. Yeah, they have glossier hair than me. Yeah.
That's a new one for me.
Right. Yeah. Claire?
Yeah,
what's your top hair tips?
Top hair tip? Just, I don't know, I think...
But all that
chlorine... Making
sure
you wash it straight when you're done. No delay.
All right, okay. So let's talk about the gala then. Who wants to take that one?
So we have the 40th gala coming up now on the 13th of December. We're super excited for this, Greg. We are inviting Derry City to join us and Strabane Otters. Two clubs that showed us a huge welcome back at the time when the old swimming pool was closed for a period. These clubs facilitated training with Swilly Seals at that time. So this is a give back to them. We're inviting them on the night. It's going to be competitive. So we're going to see some excellent swimming, excellent high quality swimming. And afterwards, we are having teas and coffees and tray bakes for anybody who is available to call down. We'd love to see past members, coaches, parents, committee members to come down to meet the
It's a real opportunity to reconnect as well.
Yeah, 100%.
Just we were talking about that. What an opportunity to turn up because you're going to bump into people you know.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think I've spoken to other people who are part of the Swilly Seals and they all feel the same about that, you know, that sort of camaraderie and the team spirit and stuff. So I would encourage all the past swimmers and coaches and committee members to come down. And while it'll be competitive, it'll also be really good fun as well.
Yeah, so but if you're competitive, you're competitive, right?
They can be competitive. We'll have to.
I can't have a friendly game of pool or darts. And I don't care who I'm playing, right? If you're competitive, you're competitive.
That is true.
I understand where you're coming from. And is that in categories, like age categories and stuff, or how are you doing that?
Yes, it'll be run similar to a PTL format. Brilliant. If anybody's listening who's familiar to that, that's like a provincial town league. So they'll all be put into their age categories and there'll be some, it'll just be a great event. And we would encourage anybody who's curious about swimming, competitive swimming, to come down and have a view on the gallery as well. Like, it just doesn't have to be past and present club members. You know, if you're interested yourself, Greg, you're more than welcome to pop down for...
Give it a go.
What makes you think I don't swim?
Just your question about the breathing there, maybe.
I don't swim at her level. I mean, it doesn't mean I can't. I can doggy paddle to get myself to safety.
As I said, all abilities are welcome, you know.
I mean, I can't. It's in bursts, right? I can swim.
We'll do like half a lane
width.
For you.
A width. Okay. Can imagine me disrupting the whole thing, doing a width in the middle. I didn't judge yous and your age and stuff. But anyway, here we are. So when and where?
So it's going to be Saturday the 13th in the Aura. Warm-up is at 5 p.m. and then it will start at 6 and teas and coffees hopefully around 7:30.
And before you let you go, I want to, because I kind of spoke over at the end and I want to make sure everyone gets a mention, just in terms of some of the people that have come through Swilly Seals or are sort of on the brink. I don't want to put you on the spot, but throw some names out there.
So... I can't not mention Anna Hennessy and Owen Rooney, two of our club members who represented the club at the National Down Syndrome Swimming Competitions in Portugal.
Oh, brilliant.
In October. Yeah, they are fantastic swimmers and just great, great people altogether. And we also had great success. Like, swimming lends itself to a lot of other sports as well, Greg. We have some kids who are like good footballers, you know, GAA, soccer, gymnasts. And then as people get older, like myself included, then they sometimes branch into triathlon, you know, and you need a good swim to be a good triathlete.
Sure,
you know, you want to be out of that pool quickly. And the likes of Aidan Callaghan, who came up through Swilly Seals, a phenomenal athlete. He's represented the country abroad in triathlon events and, you know, hugely successful. And Aidan has a fantastic swim, you know, and he's still held on to that past member. And as I said, like we
plus
have.
Plus, also, too, it's a low impact way of people.
Well,
you know,
absolutely.
People have injuries and what have you, they can still stay active and.
Yes, injury prevention, recovering from injury.
Your core, too. How important is that?
So fortunate as well to have an occupational therapist and a physiotherapist, Noelle Sweeney and Carmel Sweeney, on the coaching committee or the coaching team. Who, you know, are doing body analysis every day for their bread and butter, for their jobs. So
Claire, as one of the youngest people in the room, who should we be looking out for then on the A-team, or who's impressing you, or who do you think, right, you know what?
Definitely Molly Nulty and Killian Murphy would be probably two of our highest level swimmers. They'd be a bit older now, they're both done school, but they're both swimming at a very high level. And Kiva and Ava Nikkei. They're really good as well. They're
brilliant.
Around my age.
Oh, so keep an eye out them. Right, ladies, anything else that you want to mention before we go?
Yeah, the only other thing we just give a shout out for is, you know, a club like Swilly Seals can't thrive without local support, and we do rely on donations and sponsorship to keep the training affordable and give equipment and give the swimmers every chance to succeed. So, you know, any contribution, big or small, helps to provide opportunities for the young swimmers and to chase their dreams. So if you're a local business or you're looking to sponsor or donate, we'd love if you got in contact with us. We can do that via email at committee@swillyseals.ie. And so, we just encourage everybody to do that.
It's yous are all incredibly aware of this, but those who aren't and don't realise what's going on, you know, the amount of dedication from volunteers and coaches, but also the amount of positive impact that's happening on people of all different abilities and all ages on their lives as well. So well worth supporting. And if there's any fundraisers upcoming, let us know, and the public would be interested in. Listen, best luck with the exams and everything that follows and the swimming, Claire.
Thank you.
Thank you very much indeed. Roisin Gardner, a coach with Swilly Seals, thank you.
That's great.
And Aoife McIldowney, former swimmer, former Aussie, now back home, and coach with the Swilly Seals, isn't that right?
Yeah, that's okay. Right.
Okay, and the gala is fun with an element competition event.
Yes.
When and where again? Just remind us.
The 13th of December.
Yeah, in the Aura.
Okay.
5 p.m. warm up.
Thanks, Claire. Thanks, Aoife.
Thank
Thanks, Roisin. Back
Thank
after
you.
The break. A caller says there are some takeaways that are using bottles that are not part of the deposit return scheme. When you go to recycle them, you can't return them as they have no label. How is this fair if other takeaways are playing by the rules and paying the deposit? Well, it's not just takeaways. I've come across quite a number of places because, like every house, you would swear the can in our house is worth €1 million. You know, you dare squeeze a can and you're getting a clip around the ear, right? But you do note at times you look around the can and they aren't recyclable. I don't know what the ups and downs of that are, to be honest with you. I don't know the legalities of it. If they're not charging the 15 cent, does it matter? I just genuinely don't know. The US is correct to stay out of the proxy war. Micheál Martin and his overlords in the EU will drag us into a war, let's not forget. Ukraine sided with the Nazis during World War II and helped invade Poland. East Ukraine has always been Russian for people. They don't want to be under Kyiv, just like the Palestinians don't want Israel ruling them. Well, why not do a internationally overseen referendum of that contested land and let the people decide, maybe? If we are a neutral country, which we're not, by the way, don't kid yourself, but if we are a neutral country, why is this country giving money to this war? It seems to me Zelensky, like a Dyson Hoover, which is a contradiction in terms, sucking up money everywhere he goes. Maybe I'm wrong. Listen, just we're not neutral, right? We're not politically neutral. It's an outright lie to say Putin isn't interested in peace. It's Western Europe that isn't interested in peace. Peace is a dirty word in Europe now. They keep urging Ukraine to turn down any chance to reach a peace deal and continue fighting. Everyone can see it except the powers that be. Closer to home now. Deputy Charles Ward is on the programme with me. Good morning to you, Deputy, of the 100% Redress Party, of course. How are you keeping?
Good, Greg. Good morning to you all, and good morning to all the listeners.
Quick reaction to you. Were you in the Dáil for Volodymyr Zelensky?
No, I wasn't in at all for Vladimir Zelensky. I was waiting on an amendment bill to come that was meant to come at 12 o'clock at night and did not land with us until 10 o'clock in the morning. We had prepared statements on this and we had to rewrite everything because the government basically were trying to pull a fast one with publishing the bill at 10 o'clock in the day, at 10 o'clock in the morning, and then expecting us to bait it at 6 o'clock in the evening.
When we're talking about it's not a local Donegal scheme now. This is a national, multi-year, multi-billion euro scheme. You know, if this, I mean, look at all of the conversation that was had about the bike shed, right? Yet we're talking that is literally changed down the back of the sofa compared to this. That got weeks and weeks and weeks of coverages and still referenced to this day. Why does no one care that we aren't properly scrutinising a multi-annual, multi-billion euro use of taxpayers' money? You know, I don't want to use that phrase, wake up, but come on now, like this is massive. It's not local, it's national.
Yeah, it's national and it's a scandal and it doesn't really whet their appetite. You know, it doesn't whet the national newspaper's appetite. And a lot of them would have a lot of dealings with the government and they know that, you know, there's more skullduggery going on within the government and that makes better headlines. But the fact of the matter is there's a humanitarian crisis going on.
I just want to add another thing, by the way, just for public discourse. At the end of the day, the children's hospital will look like small change compared to this scheme. And people are saying, oh, ban this, ban that, overload, who signed that, scrutiny. And here's, again, sorry to reiterate it, multi-year, multi-billion euro scheme, and it's just being rushed through and no one cares. And yet you keep talking about when's the children's, in terms of billions being spent, that's nothing compared to this.
I would totally agree. And I'll give you another example, okay? And I understand there's a war in Ukraine. I totally understand that. And we've handed over 110 million to Zelensky yesterday, right? But there's 43 families at under €1 million that have been abandoned by the state that were told that if they went, they would be getting a retrospective payment.
These are the early adopters. Families. These are the people that finished their houses before this retrospective deadline. There's 43 of them. They're left high and dry. They're 40, 50, 60, 70 grand short. They're not getting this uplift.
And I also spoke last night, there's €1 million worth, that's under €1 million would sort these families out. They were promised this, they went in good faith, they're in debt. And the government, with a swing of a pen, could sort this, but they didn't. And then the other end of it is, I was on the floor of the Dáil last night, where there is a second class citizenship thing going on here, where a family in Dublin who were on the pirate scheme and a family in Mayo, two sisters related, and one has had 100% redress in Dublin, and the other is short by over €150,000. We're treated as second class citizens. Mm. There's no other way around it. It's fact.
Oh, I just want to timeline this before we get into the nitty gritties of it. Right, this is the Defective Concrete Blocks Amendment Bill.
Yeah,
this has been worked on for a year, right? So 365 days of work went into this bill. Yeah. Now, the way we have this country set up is that before a bill moves on, it's scrutinised, right? That's why you elect your TDs, because what happens is they hold the bill to account, they hold the government to account, they scrutinise it, they find out any problems, any faults before it reaches a point whereby there is of no return. In your experience so far, ordinarily, a first stage bill to the second stage bill, what type of a gap is ordinarily between those two processes?
We could have processed this in weeks. It shouldn't have taken a year.
I'm on about moving it from this stage to the second stage.
Moving it from this stage to the second stage, it should have been done. And you could have done it in a couple of days at least, no problem at all. You could have rushed it through, but we would have scrutinised it. It would have gone to the Housing Committee. But this is, it's the secrecy behind it. It's the cloak and dagger stuff. Announcing a bill that took a year and then publishing at 10 o'clock in the morning before the debate and then doing a press release at 3:30 saying that, well, we're going to include in the next one side by sides and you know, semi-detached, coming down at the same time and all this. This is deliberately done to take the shade off the fact is that 43 homeowners abandoned, IS465 not following the science, still no proper checks on quarries. They don't know if they're producing
but materials. Presumably this has provision for taking into it the new regulations when they are published, I would imagine that.
When they're published.
Yeah, okay. But is there, whilst you might not be happy with the process, does this make remediation, the remediation scheme fairer and more practical? Greater flexibility will be introduced for semi-detached and co-joined houses. If one property qualifies for remediation, the adjoining property may also be included for assessment under the scheme, even where it does not meet the full damage threshold. That was a problem that was highlighted. Is it being addressed in this bill?
Yeah.
Provision will be made in certain cases for the construction of adjacent dwellings, which was another thing people were looking for. This measure is intended to assist vulnerable families who face challenges in finding suitable alternative accommodation while their homes are being remediated. So the scheme has been adapted to address those concerns. Yeah, builders will now have to prove compliance before homes can be occupied, ensuring safer housing for families. Compliance with what, though? Compliance with what? Block regs? How does that
what
work?
Standard? Yeah, exactly. What standard are they going to be held accountable to? You know what I mean? This is what we need. We need proper governance here. We need proper governance. We need proper checks and balances. Basically, the system they have in Northern Ireland for building control, we need to adapt it and follow that like the Bible. It's the only way that you can get it done properly. And there's a reluctance to build in Donegal. There's no two ways about it, because there's block suppliers who are supplying blocks that don't know if the blocks are safe. There's people, suppliers come in from Northern Ireland now and have an advantage over what's currently going on, which is wrong. And what I'm trying to say to them is, we've got to do this properly. You know, and the reason is, these amendments, there's still 43 homeowners abandoned here. Mm. You know what I mean? And the side-by-sides came in late, but that still has to be amended for. And they'll say it'll be amended for. We've seen what it's like. And the opposition TDs stand up and they go, unfortunately, it took a year. It shouldn't have taken a year. No, it shouldn't have taken a year. We could have had this done and dusted.
That's the government TDs you're talking of there, not the opposition.
Yeah, the government TDs.
That being said, there was a united voice from Donegal. Pat the Cloak Gallagher highlighted issues. Charlie McConnell Logue said, outstanding issues need to be dealt with urgency. Pádraig McLoughlin made the contrast that you did between the pyrite situation in Leinster and your speaking as well. So, I mean, there was something of a united voice. People can put blame around the place, right? But there was something of a united voice from Donegal across the political divide saying that this has taken too long, other stuff needs to be included. Is that encouraging to you, that we heard such strong commentary from government deputies? Now, I know it's not easy as an opposition TD to assess favourably government TDs, but in fairness.
No, look, it's like everything. The devil's in the detail, right? So Pat gets up and Pat tells it the way it is, basically. And Charlie will say, you know, there's teething problems. It's beyond teething problems, what we've got going on here. You know, we have a scheme that's in place now for a number of years, and the numbers are 208 houses built. There's 300 and something odd houses coming up. But most of them are remediation. And this is an issue. And this needs to be highlighted, where government TDs can come out and say that there's 500 houses in the scheme coming through, and there's 3,000 applicants. There's 3,000 people stuck because they either don't have the money or they're reluctant to move.
Was there any reference to downgraded homeowners? Because that's another cohort that are they're still awaiting a review of their appeals, which is really quite remarkable.
They're still awaiting the appeal. And it's a sickener for them because I remember being at the protest before I got elected in September with them, and them basically they were so happy going up on the bus, and within hours you could just feel the apprehension by the time you get there and go, this could maybe take longer, and unfortunately they're still there.
This
is people's lives.
Yeah, defective concrete caused this issue. Defective concrete blocks caused this issue. At the same time, the government says we are strengthening and extending building control enforcement procedures in the interests of ensuring compliance with building regulations. Now, the key factor in all of this is breeze blocks, these concrete blocks, right? Are you saying to me that that's that paragraph that that has been attributed to Minister Brown does not include the regulation and control of the production of concrete breeze blocks?
Not at the moment. Okay. Not at the moment.
Right. That's, you know, that's rather concerning.
Yeah, it is. It is concerning because, you know, a concrete block should mean a concrete block. Mm-hmm. But the difference between a concrete block in Donegal and in Wexford is Minister Brown's constituency has a pyrrhotite problem, the same as Donegal, and we're geographically at the other ends of the country. So this issue is everywhere, and you have to basically have this, follow the science. And I always say this, there needs to be centralised labs. There needs to be a lab in Donegal, there needs to be a lab in the Midlands, and there needs to be a lab in the South.
Can we,
test everything.
Can we give Minister Brown any credit here, though? And I think it's only fair that if we can be fair, right? Because we dealt with Dara O'Brien as a county for a long time. There were frustrations there. Minister Brown did come in. He was in listening mode. I understand that. In my interview with him, it was clear that he hadn't got a full grasp of it, but he did come up and he has made changes, and some of the stuff that people were looking for, he has delivered, right? So in fairness, under this minister, there is progress, not exactly what you might want, not how you might want it, right? But this minister seems to have a more proactive approach to the defective concrete blocks problem. Is that a fair enough statement, to be fair to the man?
Well, he's moving in the right direction, but we're going at a snail's pace.
I understand that.
If we have 25,000 homes, right, to rebuild at a minimum, then this is going to take generation after generation. We need something to happen, and we need it to happen 5 years ago.
I do understand in this competitive media market that people have to sell ads and sell papers and stuff, but I think really the national journalists in particular, some do little articles here and there, and fair play to them, really need to scrutinise this spend of the public's money and the process now, because there could be a tribunal about this in 10 years' time. That is, because we're seeing a very, very big, lots of money scheme not really getting the level of scrutiny that we kind of expect, because that's how the democracy is set up. So it'd be interesting to see a bit of scrutiny of that, because that would be what makes a difference. Okay. Deputy Charles Ward, thanks for your time.
Thank you, Greg.
Look after yourself. I'm joined on the programme now by Mary Walker Callahan, who's regional manager with Life Start Services. And we're talking in the context of the Life Start Donegal Christmas Toy Appeal. Mary, good morning to you.
Good morning, Greg. How are you?
I'm doing good. Can you just give us a brief outline of LifeStart and LifeStart Services?
Well, I suppose LifeStart Services is a home visiting, child development, parenting education and family support programme. And we work with the parents of over 560 children across the county.
That's huge. That's a huge amount of people to be working with. And of course, because it's the time of the year, your focus for the next wee while is going to be the Donegal Christmas Toy Appeal. So how can people support you, Mary, and what difference might it make?
Well, we have a lot of supports. This started a few years back with a young woman called Louise McCormick, who approached me about setting up this appeal. So basically what happens is emails go out, information goes out, and people sign up as Secret Santas. Mm. So that appeal on its own provides us with toys for over 300 children.
Yes, and the budget? The budget, generally speaking,
the budget
between 50
is between
and 70.
50 and 70 euros per child.
What this is, and obviously, Mary, there's people who themselves might have some difficulties, but there are others that might have a few spare quid, and their 50 to 70 euro can make a big, big difference to another human being, another young human being. And that's a remarkable gift that you're making available to people, I think. And I hope people take you up on it.
Absolutely. The level of need within the county is really high. So if we can alleviate some of that pressure on families, they might be able to go and put some oil into their tank to heat their homes. You know, we also have a food appeal. A young mum from Kilmacrennan, Orla Neely, and her family have worked with us for many years. And Orla puts out a food appeal, and she provides us with between 60 and 80 hampers every year to go out to families.
Are you are you in contact with these families already, Mary, through Livestart?
Yes.
So
yes.
We would be
in contact with most of the families, but then if there's other services out there that have families that are struggling, they would approach us for some support as well.
Yes.
So just to spread it around and make sure that all those that are struggling get support. Mm.
So really what I was just to double down with the listeners in that, you know, these are established families that you're working with that we know already will struggle to meet the needs for Christmas,
absolutely,
be it food or otherwise. And this toy appeal will directly benefit up to 400 children across Donegal. A budget of between 50 and 70 is recommended.
70.
Obviously, there are ongoing costs with something that has batteries. Now, that being said, there are a lot of stuff nowadays comes with actually rechargeable batteries in them as well too. So maybe that could be.
Well, we try to encourage our Secret Santas not to buy anything with batteries.
Okay, nothing at all.
Go back to the old educational toys that are great for children. And Greg, I must mention as well, we have three other groups that provide us with toys at Christmas: Tata Consultancy in Letterkenny, G8 Fitness in Letterkenny, and Foyle Foods in Carrigans. They also provide us with toys at Christmas. So that enables us to give out toys for birthdays not throughout the year as
Brilliant.
Well, because as we know, the problems don't just end because Christmas is over. It's as bad the rest of the year, you know. So, you know, we couldn't do our work without the support of everybody out there.
How do people get stuff
to... That are so generous and kind.
Is it ideal that if the person goes out and purchases something within that 50 to 70 range and drops it off or donates the money, or is it a mixture?
Yes, we usually set up drop-off points around the county. So, like, this year we would have used Cara House Family Resource Centre and Finn Valley Family Resource Centre. So, you know, all the services come together to support one another, and that's really beneficial, so that we can, and then we go along and we collect everything and bring it into our main office.
Okay. Right.
And then all of the staff, it'll all be divided up, and then the staff will deliver it all out before Christmas.
Okay. So where do you find out more information?
So there is a Facebook page, the Donegal Christmas Toy Appeal.
That's the best place to go. The Donegal Christmas Toy Appeal on Facebook. We will link it on our
Facebook
as well. Well done, Mary, and all the crew. Mary Walker Callahan. Right, so as you know, this week we've teamed up with Cadbury Secret Santa. They're giving away over 20,000 chocolate bars this year. You can look out for the posters and give someone a chocolate bar anonymously. But also we are giving away on Friday €500, €250, one for all voucher for someone who's nominating someone special, and also a €250 one for all voucher for the person that is special. And you're all special, but you know what I mean. So we've had two fantastic people nominated already. Today's nominee, I wish to nominate my mother, Bridie Marley Glenfinn, for Secret Santa. She's coming 99 years in January 2026. She's so mentally alert, but since a fall and broken hip, she's now housebound. As a child back in 1927, she didn't receive many Santa gifts on a Christmas morning. This would be such a lift for her. She's an amazing mother, granny and great-granny. She puts everyone else first before her own needs. Her daughter Helen has nominated her. So Helen and Bridie, you are both part of our Lucky Five on Friday, and one of that Lucky Five will be the overall luckiest and win those vouchers. All right, fair play. Thank you very much indeed for that and for all of your entrants. Sosheen says, Greg, keep referring to Putin, historically referring to the West being the aggressor. A blind man could see it was 144 million population versus 40 million. The brilliant chess player is now playing the king, Trump, by offering mineral deals. Ukraine is a mere pawn now. It all comes down to NATO being a noisy neighbour with military parades for Kyiv. Yeah, there was There's a lot of stuff happened that led up to this, and it's in our interests, as always. It's in our best interests to, even if we think we know what we think, to double-check we know what we think and see different perspectives. It's so important, you know, and life is so much easier when you view things through a variety of prisms. Read the environment. Judicial reviews are not the problem, but bad planning and ignoring the laws that protect the environment are. The government can try to change the law so their buddies can build anything anywhere, but the lawyers will have a field day as to what the government doing is illegal because people have the right to protect the environment. On pensions, that person from Scotland doesn't know when she's well off. She gets €1,300 per month from Scotland. I've worked all my life in Ireland and I only get €320 per week pension to support myself and my wife. If she didn't work in Ireland, she's not entitled to our pension. Okay, there you go. Morning, Greg. How can non-Irish people coming into this country get a pension and an Irish-born citizen be denied a pension? I do not understand why this is happening. Thank you. Well, I don't know. Okay, listen, thank you. It's an interesting, it's been an interesting day, hasn't it? We'll be back with you tomorrow morning at 9 o'clock. Have a wonderful Wednesday, everyone.